As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Ripper, Ladies and gentlemen, you are terrible. That's right. I'm Layman Pascal, and on behalf of CILU 102.7 FM, I've simply got to tell you that you are literally the worst. The worst what? Oh, it doesn't matter. Everything, maybe. You are an awful abuser of whatever power you happen to have. And what you should take away from that last statement is the idea that today we're going to be looking at how power and getting insulted belong together. We all know that fragile authoritarians get prickly when you aren't just praising every little thing about them, but we can also see that people who actually have and gain power have learned to accommodate and even assimilate the disapproval of others. That's right, it's the disreputable hegemony edition of the Cinematic Asylum Awesome Show. Great job. Disreputable hegemony.
Disreputable hegemony. Disreputable.
In the kind of society that you live in.
Well, there's a lot of bleeding hearts around who just don't like to see people with helmets and guns. All I can say is go on and bleed. But it's more important to keep law and order in this society than to be worried about weak-kneed people who don't like the looks of a
At any cost? At any cost? How far would you go with that? How far would you extend that?
Well, just watch me.
Disreputable.
Just watch me.
Hegemony.
What's up with chicken sandwiches?
Big bun, puny chicken. It takes two to fill me up.
Give me more chicken!
Finally!
Hello, chicken.
Someone was listening.
It's got two of everything.
Two pieces of cheese.
Two pieces of bacon.
And two pieces of chicken.
So long, bun.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a chicken sandwich.
The new KFC Double Down Chicken Sandwich. So much 100% premium chicken, we didn't have room for a bun. Tried an original recipe or grill.
Hey, Colonel. You the man.
Unthink. It tastes the unhungry side of KFC.
That was 1970s Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau and KFC teaching us something about doubling down. Doubling down can mean many things, but it has some general connotation of leaning into a position rather than wriggling away from it. Taking ownership of the idea that you are responsible for this kind of thing. Doubling down is what you do when someone implies an insult, but instead of disagreeing with them and claiming that you aren't that bad thing, you go with it. That can be a power move. Today we're thinking about how you can tell who has power and status because of how they receive and absorb denigrating complaints. I'll be speculating wildly that if you actually offer someone... power when you complain about their misuse of power. And if you want more power, you've somehow got to become happier about being complained about. It's a tricky thing. We'd all like more power, and we'd all like powerful people to stop being so horrible. But do we make them more powerful when we complain about their abuses of power? We'd all like to not be condemned, misjudged, or subjected to unflattering comparisons and descriptions, but what if that's part of the way in which you gather social influence, especially in the internet age when pointlessly aggressive commentary has become mainstream? I mean, why even post a comment on a YouTube video if you're not going to call their very existence into question? If I denounce you as an oppressor, it may be totally legit, but in a sense, I might be recognizing that you have the potential to be my superior. I'm pointing directly to the potential or the reality of your power over me. I'm almost offering you power if, as Napoleon famously said, power is the appearance of power. And you certainly appear to have more power when I complain about your misuse of power. But what if you refuse my complaint? What if you argue with me, saying you're not an oppressor? Are you refusing the power I'm offering you? Have you failed the test? Should you not simply agree that you are exhibiting microaggressions and continue along your merry way? Did you fall for my trap when you tried to... Did you fall for the trap when you tried to adapt to my critique, to the context of my critique? You didn't want to own it, perhaps, or maybe it literally wasn't true, but those valid considerations may lead in directions other than empowerment. Sometimes maybe slander is a good thing. Maybe if you belong to a group that doesn't want to use certain upsetting and degrading words. Maybe if you belong to a group that doesn't want certain upsetting and degrading words to be used about you, then you're actually perpetuating the disempowerment of your own group. That would be weird, right? But maybe the road to empowerment is paved with the weirdness of accepting and transmuting low-status descriptions of yourself. You know, when I was a kid back in Sointola, we used to go up into the woods to this amazing waterfall over a little clay and sand cave. The waterfall had roots growing down its face, and so I like to climb up it, right up the waterfall with the water pounding down on me. I was working against resistance in order to get higher up. I had to accept the water's condemnation of my ascent. And why not? All exercise involves working against resistance. But what is resistance in social status affairs? Is resistance the tendency of other people to treat you with inadequate respect? Or is it your reaction to the signs of potential disrespect? It's ambiguous, but today we're investigating the latter hypothesis, that it may be a badge of honor to be slandered. It may be that insults distinguish you from the main bulk of people. And in order to have more status, you have to be distinguished. Yet the bulk of people, even those who temporarily occupy official leadership positions, seem to be desperate to avoid having any bad things said about them. Politicians cringe, corporations drop their sponsorship deals as soon as potentially bad things surface about any of their spokesmen, university deans back down from student complaints, Disney and the NBA refuse to say things that China complains about. Seems suspiciously like cowardice, doesn't it? Everyone seems to act as though they have no power. Even the most powerful. And so why wouldn't we have a crisis of authority in our society? Why wouldn't we raise a generation or two of radical anti-authoritarians if almost all our authority figures are contemptible precisely because they are unwilling to be condemned, to stand firm and absorb complaints about themselves? Far too many of our so-called officials take every complaint seriously instead of owning the fact that they are indeed the thing getting complained about. They're not standing in the position given to them by the complaint. We all know the scenario of the employer or manager who doesn't want to have to fire somebody. There are many, many natural human reasons for this, but in a very abstract sense, we see that power is being refused or treated hesitantly where it risks provoking someone else's verbal or social negativity toward us. How deep does this kind of pattern go? Does it explain why openly offensive characters seem to be getting elected all over the world? Are we collectively and subconsciously desperate for anyone who won't try to evade looking bad? Are the kind of progressive politicians we need today just too nice and easily swayed by the criticism that they might be too mean and insulting and should comply and get in line? Are they refusing power by refusing to be perceived as the upsetting ones? Today I invite us to think about the possibility that we may make things stronger by denigrating them.
Pretty little bird, but I've been grounded for so long. Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Singleaf, keep coming up on the Cinematic Asylum. To quote Mr. Richard Milhouse Nixon, when the president does it, it's not a crime. What a crazy statement.
When the president does it, that means
Nixon,
that it is
with
not
his
illegal.
Typical bizarreness, is both admitting to criminal activity and to the use of a privilege to evade and rise above that criminal activity. Sound insane? Sure. But, on the other hand, he got to be president of the United States. What did you ever do? See what I mean? It's possible that the attitude of fingering yourself as the culprit, intentionally or unintentionally, of owning, consciously or instinctively, your role as the embodiment of things that others complain about, that this is the attitude that actually helps people rise in power. If this is true, then it's a very dangerous fact. It means there's always a potential rift between complexity, decency, and empowerment. Right now, we see around the world elections being won by nationalistic, cartoonishly aggressive, publicly offensive, who are overtly corrupt, and nationalistic, cartoonishly aggressive, but maybe people are electing them precisely because they are aggressive pseudos. Maybe they would elect sensitive, intelligent progressives if they were also to act more offensively and take ownership of disturbing social expressions. To play offense means to be offensive. The problem with that is that the most educated and cooperative people are also often the nicest. The people most attuned to the nuances of contemporary culture and human decency, more deft in staying up to date with their phraseology and better able to take the perspectives of others, and therefore, in a way, the least likely to give wanton offense. Is that to their credit? Or is it holding them back? Is it holding all of us
better
back?
Able to take the perspectives
of others? Is
the
entire economy and climate of the earth held hostage because these people, these potential good leaders, aren't getting elected because these same people are constantly wasting time trying not to appear upsetting to the population or the establishment or the media? Scary idea. It also would mean that if you want someone to lose an election, just convince them they have to be nicer, better behaved, more likable, more mainstream, less upsetting.
Sail onward, God destroyer, in Lel's vessel, unstoppable, no prison can gauge your soul, in Lel's son, unstoppable, sail onward, God destroyer, cat captain, we salute you.
Just this week, Michelle Bachmann actually predicted that I would bring about the biblical end of days. Now that's a legacy. That's big. I mean, Lincoln, Washington, they didn't do that.
That was a black guy named Hussein. He was elected to the highest office in the land by the most backward people in the civilized world when they were still in their post-terror attack hysteria. That's a lot to overcome, but he did it. Part of the reason might be because of his ability, demonstrated in that clip from the 2016 White House Correspondents' Dinner, to take on the role of the negative, to own the shadow and the denigrated quality. Not everyone is the kind of anti-fragile bastard who would be willing to publicly admit to being the apocalypse. Jokes always involve enfolding an insult, don't they? The comedian, culture's pathos worker, let's say, has to generate and then step into the role of the insulted party. The comedian insults himself. That's amazing. It sort of makes him or her invulnerable to the insults of others. You can't get dirt on someone who's already caked in mud, right? Most of us lean away from slander, but good politicians and good comedians seem to lean into it. They actively try to have the joke be at their own expense. That puts their own expense in the center of the ring. They seek out roles in society that are definitely going to get them made fun of and hated. Isn't that an amazing thing to consider? If power is the appearance of power, as Napoleon is reported to have said, then maybe by having the joke be at your expense, you start to have the kind of social bank account that allows for that kind of expense.
If power
is
the kind
of expenditure, as Napoleon
start
is reported
paying for it
to have
until
said,
you can afford it.
If power is the appearance of power,
I remember my dear
sainted
old mother in earlier phases of life saying she
liked
Jerry
Seinfeld because his humor wasn't at anyone's expense. But it is, of course. You just have to listen more closely. He doesn't sound mean. He's graceful about it. But the joke is always still at somebody's expense, or even at reality's expense. It always costs somebody something. And it may be no coincidence that it also costs you something to buy people's votes.
Both isn't I carry on, but I can't forget what was said.
Sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
Sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I don't even know the reason why. But I guess I keep a gambling, lots of booze and lots of rambling. Well, it's easier than just a waiting around to die. All one time, friends, I had a ma, even had a pa. Well, he beat her with a belt once, cause she cried. She told him to take care of me, headed down to Tennessee. Well, it's easier than just a waiting around to die. Came age and I found a girl in a Tuscaloosa bar. Oh, she cleaned me out and hit it on the sly. Well, I tried to kill the pain, I bought some wine and hopped a train. Seemed easier than just a waiting around to die. Then a friend said he knew where some easy money was. We robbed a man and brother did we fly. But the posse caught up with me and drug me back to Muskogee. And it's 2 long years of waiting around to die. Oh, but now I'm out of prison, I got me a friend at last. He don't drink or steal or cheat or lie. Oh, his name's Codeine, he's the nicest thing I've seen. Well, together we're gonna wait around and die. Yeah, together we're gonna wait around and die.
You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM, and that was Tchaikovsky from V for Vendetta. Townes Van Zandt waiting around to die, and then Tchaikovsky from V for Vendetta. Townes Van Zandt waiting around to die from the Ozarks, and V for Vendetta's Tchaikovsky. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Layman Pascal, and today we're looking at the willingness to be insulted and its connection to empowerment. In the film V for Vendetta, mentioned a moment ago, based on Alan Moore's graphic novel, the oppressive military, economic, and media control structure of the dystopian future of England is gradually destroyed, undermined, and overturned by an anonymous man in a Guy Fawkes mask. He's disfigured. He's a criminal. He's hidden. He's a terrorist, etc. You know where I'm going with this. He takes the position of the negative pole in society quite willingly, and it may be no coincidence that this coincides with his ascendancy over that society. And in the movie Fight Club, there's this very Christian theme of winning by allowing yourself to be attacked. Remember when Jesus said to turn the other cheek and forgive your enemies? That dude let himself get crucified, and by that very means, gain power over empires and entire millennia. It's pretty interesting. In Fight Club, Brad Pitt defeats a mafia guy named Lou by allowing himself to get beaten to a pulp. Everyone in that movie gets stronger by losing fights. And when they finally set up a training facility, the initiation procedure is to wait on the doorstep and get perpetually insulted. If he's fat, tell him he's too fat. If he's old, he's too old. If he's young, he's too young. It doesn't matter what the content is, it just matters that whoever we bring into the organization has to be able to not flinch in the face of slanderous vibes coming toward them. That's the exact opposite of what goes on today all over the internet. The world is full of quasi-conservative snowflakes whining that they aren't allowed to say this or that word anymore. I'm not allowed to say queer anymore. I can't talk about my belief in the genetic roots of gender. I can't dress in blackface. Well, of course, you can still do all those things. What they mean by cannot do them is they can't do them without taking the risk that somebody somewhere on the interwebs will complain about it. They can't record themselves in public space without members of the public potentially saying negative things about them. Oh, the humanity. They're unwilling to accept being in the position of the one who gets complained about it. That's pretty normal. I feel that, too. But normal sometimes is the opposite of having power and status and safety. So why not consider the possibility of leaning into it, at least sometimes? Why not agree with any apparently negative things you hear people say about you? It feels risky, but it is a valid option, especially if there is ultimately no way to keep yourself safe from attacks. For you know where I'm going with this. for you know where I'm going with
Hello.
This.
Hello! Hello!
I'm Layman Pascal, and you're listening to the Deplorable Hegemon, the Disreputable Hegemon, the Disreputable Hegemony episode of the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM on the electromagnetic communication spectrum of the planet Earth. You just heard Maxine Cyrene's cover of Wherever Is My Mind from the Fight Club, and then Break Reality doing Game of Thrones theme on cello. In Game of Thrones, Lord Tywin Lannister is arguably the most powerful man in the Seven Kingdoms, and he is notable for always smiling or holding firm when people accuse him of the worst possible crimes. The eunuch super-conspirator, the Spider, also allows people to openly insult him, and so does that dwarf who continues to ascend in power over the course of the series. Whether it upsets them or not is not exactly the point. The point is that they try to benefit from the attempt to feel that insults are both okay and below them. To be insulted or caught by an insult and to attempt to prove that you were not doing the bad thing that the insult implies in public is to demonstrate to everyone that you think the insult is dangerous and maybe stronger and higher than you. You could try to be higher than the insult, but what would that involve? Tywin Lannister never challenges a negative opinion about himself. Why would he? Every insult implies that you have the power to do something that other people find upsetting. Power is what Tywin wants for himself and his family. Likewise, Walter White on Breaking Bad struggled to integrate his disturbing social shadow, hiding it from his wife for a long time, but eventually famously admitting it, "I am the one who knocks," or whatever he says. And much of the plot hinges around Walt's attempts to experience his own power by accepting and having other people accept that he is that terrible thing, the Heisenberg, that they've heard about. Here's Walter White accepting the public shadow of his own identity. He's just been identified as the worst criminal in the Southwest. Does he defend himself? No. He says this.
You're goddamn right. You're goddamn right. Goddamn right. Goddamn right.
Hey, my name's Hard Rock Joe, and I hope you like punk music, because there's a punk song that I wrote for Totino's Pizza Rolls.
Totino's, Totino's.
Start the music right!
Totino's, Totino's, and how did you know? Totino's, Totino's, everybody's talking about Totino's, Totino's.
Thank you.
Feminine pizza bag. Hi,
man. Wanna go nuts? Come to my place and see a pizza roll.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tim Heidecker.
And I'm Eric Werhardt.
Hey, Eric, do you know what my name is?
Absolutely. You just told us, Tim Heidecker.
Wrong. I'm Totino the pizza boy.
Hi, I'm Tennessee, a pizza freak, and I have a secret. I am Pizza Totino's boy.
Checkmate.
We're all winners thanks to Totino's Pizza Rolls.
Pizza chess!
You can keep all that corporate BS. I'm into punk pizza rolls with Totino's.
When you need a meal quick.
What you want, a stack with a spicy kick?
Make them in the oven or the microwave.
Think about all the time you save.
Pump mosh.
Pizza Valentine.
I'm part of the Totino's lifestyle. I'll admit it.
There's three things I love in life. My Mamma Mia, party pizzas, Totino boy.
I can't get enough of Totino's pizza rolls. I put them in my mouth 5 times a day.
I put some rolls in my mouth. I put some rolls in my mouth.
Pizza roll.
I put some rolls in my mouth. I put some rolls in my mouth. I put some rolls in my mouth.
Yes! Pizza roll launcher.
I feed you in the morning.
Woo!
I feed you at lunch.
Woo!
Feed you at dinner.
Woo!
Oh.
Totino's, Totino's, how did you know? Totino's, Totino's, everybody's talking about
Totino's, 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 Totino's.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the original hardcore punk scene. That's what I'm all about, like punk bass. And pizza rolls.
Yeah.
Walter White and Totino Boy, both things that profited somehow from allowing themselves to be perceived negatively. There's a common theme in speculative fiction, the role of the powerful in creating their own enemies. Any kind of dialectical or yin-yang evaluations of social control would suggest that it benefits the controllers to have anti-controllers. Not just so they can impose their will under the guise of defense against the enemy, but so that there's someone who publicly slanders them, someone who insults them, someone who insists, therefore, that they have enough power that it needs to be insulted. Who believed in American hegemony more than Osama bin Laden? And if you wanted American military and economic invasion in Afghanistan, you could not have done a better job than the Twin Tower thing his cabal of fanatics apparently pulled off. Maybe the rulers need people to say that the rulers are the rulers by saying that they are terrible rulers. But imagine what it would take for you to surreptitiously start a rumor that you were a terrible person exerting all your powers in wrong and abusive ways. It's weird, eh? But celebrities do leak sex tapes and controversial material about themselves all the time just in order to stay in the public eye and keep people talking about them. So our theory, although that's probably too grand a term for it, about the relationship between insult and power goes along with this reasonably common trend that power is reinforced by people creating their own enemies and their own negative buzz. A false flag attack, as you know well, is when a government attacks its own country and then makes it look like someone else did it, makes it look like somebody hates them so much that they can now make a power move. If someone says to you that your people, your gender, your race, your sports team, your belief system, whatever, has been the oppressors throughout history, what should you do? Should you try to point out the flaws in the thinking of other people as being parts of... Should you point out the thinking flaw that people are parts of groups in the first place? Should you note the much deeper and subtler patterns of cooperation that different parts of different groups always play in the maintenance of any kind of social system? Or should you admit it, embrace it, go for it, even if you don't totally think it's true? Well, that depends on your goal. If a guy's trying to pick up chicks on a campus, it might be a good strategy for him to start sincerely agreeing with feminist critiques of the patriarchy. Yeah, we're terrible and we have power. Can I buy you a drink? Ought you to want to belong to the group that provides the comparison to the diversity and power of others? Why would you not want to belong to the chastised group if the very frame of chastisement indicates that you do in fact hold power? Why would you not want to be associated with the group that apparently holds power according to the upset of others? The group who bears the blame for marginalization is not necessarily the only or even the most marginalizing group, but who cares? By even pretending to be in the group that does the marginalization, you may be retaining the social dominance position. It's constantly being offered to you by people who want to critique you as their oppressors or whatever. Oppressor is a power position. It may be a gift offered to you by the critics of oppression. Don't necessarily flinch from it. You may want to, you may not want to, but consider that you do have an option. The group that bears the most insults might be, by definition, the hegemony. Hegemonies are always disreputable. Their power is not decreased by our insults and criticisms. In the Sam Rockwell film Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Julia Roberts quotes Nietzsche saying, "He who despises himself still honors himself as the one who despises." So even insulting yourself, even decrying yourself, might be a way to increase your own sense of power. We'll be right back. Blue Peter with the Lap of Luxury. Where did we get this idea that insults are problematic to receive? We live in moralistic and maybe post-moralistic cultures in which large monotheistic religions have seemingly helped us to divide all qualities and adjectives into two groups, the good ones and the bad ones. We want good and hate bad things. Delicious versus yucky, wise versus foolish, serious versus unserious, authentic versus hypocritical, cool versus not versus intolerant, and on and on. Do we, in fact, take this opposition seriously, and what does that say about us, that we submit without knowing why to the affective polarization assumptions of our linguistic presumptions about the attitudes of the common hive of people and its authorities in public communications? Why do we do that? What would happen if we took all adjectives as positive? What if we wanted, instead of being good and not bad, to be good in our own way and bad in our own way? What if we stopped trying to be compassionate to everyone and started trying to be better at being compassionate and better at being heartless? What if we wanted the right kind of beauty and the right kind of ugliness? Do you see what I'm saying? There is, on the one hand, a kind of passive conformist approach to the existence of negative adjectives, and on the other hand, a more complex, dynamic, and robust approach which takes every attribute as potentially an honor for those who experience themselves with something like true self-esteem. And if it bothers you too much to hear people slander you or refer to you by rude words and unacceptable names, then maybe you don't have much self-esteem, and maybe you're actively going in the opposite direction from gaining any. In his book, The Spell of the Sensuous, author David Abram recounts his time living in rural South Asian villages using the cover of being a traveling magician to ingratiate himself with the local shamans in order to research their practices more closely. One of the first things that stands out to him in that book was the dualistic nature of the way in which the villagers regarded their shamans. While they turned to these figures for positive outcomes in order to ask for good luck, assistance in curing illness, and thinking through political problems and seeing new aspects of reality, they also believed that the shamans caused diseases, performed black magic, deluded, cheated, and stole from people. At first, Abrams was puzzled when his personal observations revealed that these were primarily honest and altruistic characters. He not only didn't see them doing any black magic, he found they frequently made difficult journeys to help people and frequently refused honor and payment from people. However, his puzzlement was further intensified when he discovered that the local healers were actually encouraging their own bad reputations. Some of the rumors about black magic curses and even dark blood rituals were being started by the shamans themselves. Abrams decided it was part of a scheme to get people to leave them alone. Most of them lived at the edge or just beyond the edge of the village, and his conclusion was that their primary work involved mediating between non-human and human intelligences. Helping out in the village, healing, and playing a role within the social pageantry of the society was only a small but time-consuming part of their life, which they tried to minimize, encouraging believers to believe bad things about them in order to make themselves seem dangerous and undesirable to the villagers. People should think twice before approaching them. So these characters, arguably the most intelligent and influential and experienced members of the community, treated it as perfectly appropriate that they be slandered. Part of their honor was to be dishonored. Their social dominance, in a way, was maintained in part by their willingness to absorb complaints and even to cooperate in making black marks against their reputation. I always toy with the idea of welcoming insults because I'm terrified of them. In fact, I'm so terrified of insults, I can't even tolerate praise. Accepting praise means accepting the fact that other people can evaluate you, which means they could evaluate you negatively. Tricky, tricky. So this whole topic fascinates me. But I'm telling you right now, this is the worst concept by the most abusive human on the most unfocused and arcane radio program in all of Ontario. I accept that. I'm awful. I'm far worse than you. And if you think I'm saying that flippantly, well, you're right, and that's awful too. Until next time, I've been a layman Pascal, and you've been listening to the Disreputable Hegemon edition of the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM.
How far would you extend that?
Well, just watch me.
You know, come to think of it, my grandmother was kind of a racist. You know, come to think of it, my grandmother was kind of a racist.
Just watch me.
You know, come to think of it, my grandmother was kind of a racist. I'm taking it back. You watch. Hey, that's cool. I'm taking it back.
What's up with chicken sandwiches?
Big bun, puny chicken. It takes two to fill me up.
Give me one chicken.
I'm taking it back.
Just watch.
Finally.
It.
Hello,
so
long.
Someone was listening.
It's got two of everything.
I'm
two
taking it back.
Cheese, pieces of bacon.
And two pieces of chicken.
So long.
Just watch one.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Agency of Canada.
CIOU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Signal Resources Limited, Thunder Bay's locally owned and operated audio-visual professionals. Contact them about your next multimedia event or installation at 807-475-9341 or at signalresources.com. The Thunder Bay Community Auditorium. Find them at tbca.com to purchase tickets and find out all of the details on their upcoming events. Vox Popular Media Arts Festival, located inside Trinity Hall at 310 Park Avenue. Join the fun every September for the annual Media Arts Fest, entering its 16th year in 2020.
I took